Hi, Dan.
Hi. I was reading the themes section under the Wikipedia page while we were waiting for our computers and Skypes to respectively reboot. So there's a lot of things in here about this movie.
Oh, you don't say.
I'm getting ahead of myself. How are you? You're just back from your whirlwind global tour.
It's not really a global tour if you're just like not.
You were on the globe. You were touring. There was a globe.
Okay.
Places.
I suppose. It just seems pretty dismissive of the other parts of the globe. If you were to like draw like a radius or something or a triangle. But I flew in the air in an airplane to Vienna, Austria, and spent a few days there, and then flew down to Zagreb. We rented a car and drove immediately from Zagreb to see Anže and Ursa and little baby Iza at the little seaside camp there in Istria. And then we stayed with them for 2 days. And then we drove down, took a car ferry, which is a first for me, to an island called Hvar. Which is fun to say and great for puns, like super good for that. And then we took another car ferry from there back to the mainland, drove down the rest of the coast through Bosnia because there's like 2 miles of the coast that Bosnia has. So that was an interesting out of the border back into the border experience. And then you go to Dubrovnik and stay there, and then you go on a day trip down to Montenegro and through borders again, twice, both ways. And then you go back to Vienna to have one last schnitzel before your international flight back to the States.
Mm. Mm-hmm. That was it was an unusually high number of consonants.
Yes. The States. It was an experience. We moved around.
Good experience or bad?
Well,
or you know, a little bit of both.
It was a little both because it's good that I got to see lots of things. The bad thing was we didn't really like slow down and like enjoy 2 weeks really because we were traveling within the traveling so much. Our traveling had traveling, so I find that to be the most nerve-wracking part of it, really, when you get down to it, because you're like, oh, so let me just take out everything that I have and then put everything back in and then take everything I have back out and then, oh, I hope I didn't forget anything, and we'll just schlep it all in an enormous suitcase because it needs to have 2 weeks worth of stuff, and then you just keep moving back and forth all over the place. Through borders.
You're doing the suitcase hokey pokey.
Yeah. And I bought a new one before this. So it has spinners and I could turn itself around. which is a first, because my previous one that I had since 2005 disintegrated last year after our last European trip. So it needed replacement, and I was like, oh, you know what? I'm not gonna get one of those expensive hardcover case suitcase things from a company
like
that rhymes with
plasticky looking ones.
Yeah. Well, Jason has an Away suitcase, and he really likes it.
You were about to spoil it. You said a company that rhymes with what?
Well, yes, but then we just changed direction.
Well,
but,
I want to know now.
It rhymes with Away.
Oh, I don't know that. So
yeah, so. It was Away. Away rhymes with Away.
Hmm.
Yeah. But anyway, I was like, I'll save money, and so I went to the TJ Maxx, and I got a cheapo, relatively speaking, large suitcase, because it turns out when you go up to the large sizes, they cost more. So I got a relatively inexpensive one, and then on the first leg of the trip, the baggage handling services that were afforded us managed to
I like the way you phrased that. the services that were afforded you.
Yeah, they broke one of the zipper pulls.
Mm. See, this is why you got to get the suitcase XS Max instead of just the XS. You got to get the big one.
Mm-hmm.
It's more sturdy, apparently.
Yeah, yeah. Right now I have, I don't know, what is it? The pay as you go Android equivalent. Yeah, no, it's
TJ Maxx of phones.
TJ Maxx of phones. No, and I was unhappy. I was unhappy with the selection. But it's
I find it difficult to believe that you were dissatisfied with the selection of a product.
Well, believe it, Danny boy.
At least that product didn't have like HDR10 or Dolby Atmos support or something.
You seem relatively fixated on an event from today.
My brain is all over the place.
Is it?
Because it started with that, and then I had to go do other things, and then like that never left my head because, you know, mm-hmm. decisions and stuff. Gotta make your decisions tomorrow. It's tomorrow already.
Is it?
No, I mean, not right now. It's not tomorrow.
Okay, wait. What?
Tomorrow we have to buy stuff.
Oh, yes. Okay.
So it's already tomorrow because they did it on a Wednesday, probably because the Tuesday was a bad Tuesday. Anyway, how are you? How's your trip?
I'm so tired, Dan. Don't stop effing with me.
Well, I'm not trying to. It's just I'm tired and distracted too, in a different way, probably. Probably in a less bad way, because you've got your time zone things there.
Yeah, I am severely jet lagged. I woke up at 2 a.m. Pacific time and worked 10 hours and watched a charming movie. I'm speaking with you, conversing.
You probably had time to take a nap, though. I bet your employer let you take a nap in the middle of the day so you get back on the right schedule.
Oh, yeah, definitely. We have nap time with those little, the cubicle crawly space things.
Little pods that come down over your face and you can, like, recline and relax on them.
Yeah, and then one of those, like, snuggies that you put over your head to lean on your desk. Yeah, no, that didn't happen. So I'm very tired. I'm very tired. And I tried the coffee thing. Not helping. Tried some B vitamins, some old B vites. That's also seemingly doing nothing.
Get some exercise, hang out in the sun for a little bit, you know, soak up some of that sunlight.
Yes, I'm so doing that right now at 9 at night. But I'm looking forward to, maybe I will wear myself out from today and then hopefully sleep through tonight. And then tomorrow I will maybe be closer back to a schedule that makes sense instead of waking up and then being tired all day.
Feel like it's going to take more than a day for that, but let's see if we can tire you out at least mentally. Cause we made you watch another movie. First Steven Soderbergh,
mm-hmm.
that you were probably familiar with, but I don't believe you were intimately familiar with the film.
Yeah. So it turns out I was born in 82, and this is a movie from 82. And that's not an excuse, because most people still have seen it. But for some reason, my mom never picked it to show us, and it... I don't know why. I only saw like fragments on TV or something. I just never really sought it out. But then it eventually got to a point where I was like, I feel kind of silly for never having seen this, but I don't want to see it because now I don't really have like, I don't know. It seems like a kid's movie. So what's the point?
PG. It's it stars primarily children, especially some very young children. And it's got some childlike themes. It's from the perspective of a child going through a potentially difficult life. I'm told by Wikipedia that the parents' divorce is a big theme, both for Spielberg and the character. And he tried to put some very personal stories in here, according to critics via Wikipedia. So who knows? Growing up, becoming an adult as a 5-year-old or something. But yeah. Again, I don't know about you, but given the distractible, exhausted headspace I was in watching this today and not having seen it in a very long time, I don't know what to do with this movie right now. Like, as a person in his mid-30s, I'm like, well, there you go. That was a movie with an alien and some kids and some crying.
But,
and then a weird guy in a science suit.
But you, when we were talking about the movies for Steven Spielberg, you said we should do this one.
I say a lot of dumb things. Why do you listen to me? I mean, you know, you haven't seen E.T. and you got to see E.T. at some point because it's E.T. and it's, you know, it's early Spielberg and he did lots of things that made him big and famous and strong and important, like drinking milk or whatever. But yeah, this movie is, you know, it's a simple movie. It's about a boy and his alien.
Tale is old as time.
I was just about to say that. Tale is old as time. Boy and his wrinkly alien who dies and then doesn't die because he loves him so much.
Okay. I'm gonna hurt a lot of people's feelings here. This movie is very cute and schmaltzy, extremely schmaltzy, to the point where I find it a little too saccharine for me to enjoy. As a jaded adult, because I guess I'm the government guy who, you know, was trying to chase aliens since he was a kid, but now finally having caught the alien, realizes he should let the movie E.T. go back into the wild, I guess. I feel like this has hit me at the wrong time in my life.
You aged out of the E.T. story.
Yeah.
If you're in a mindset and you have the time and the energy and the wherewithal to be moved on a deeply emotional childhood level, you know, maybe it'll do something for you. And it's good. It's got some good 80s stuff in it. You got your foggy bits. You got your cool cinematography. You got your nice John Williams score there. You got some children crying. You got a little baby Drew Barrymore doing her thing, being all cute.
Mm-hmm. More like Drew Barrymore. Am I right?
I feel like the joke's been done many times before, but I've never heard it before. So I'm going to give you credit for that, although you probably shouldn't get credit for it.
How many points do I get?
Four, because that's how many syllables are in it. Drew Barrymore.
Okay. I'm not going to contest that. It has some stuff. I do like you're saying with the fogginess. I kept finding that rather entertaining, given that it is dry as a bone, Southern California.
I almost kept expecting raptors to come jumping out of the wheat or something at some point, just with that the backlit look there.
Remember their cornfields in their backyard.
Yeah, it's one of those things too, because I can totally relate to the up and coming suburban neighborhood on the edge of civilization, because that's totally where I grew up in a neighborhood that is basically nothing, with like houses being built and large gaps between them. But then it's like there's also a cornfield, and it's like, well, hang on a second, I can't really place this.
Yeah, it has the Los Angeles suburb thing going on. But it seems to have a, and then there's a farm, and it's like, well, you know, the San Fernando Valley was farmland that was turned into housing developments. But if you look around the houses, when they actually like show them from the front of the cul-de-sac and stuff like that, it doesn't look like that. It's just a mystery cornfield that's only visible when you're in that backyard view.
I really like that shot too, where you got the shed there that's like all super lit up, and you got the little cornfield back there and stuff. It's cool looking.
Yeah. Also, this movie explains a lot of Stranger Things. But
right. How have you not seen this? Just as homework for that. Yeah. And then you got your Super 8s and the other things. It's all very.
I haven't seen Super 8.
Oh my god. Well, you know.
Well, at least you
saw this. You saw it in the right order this time. You saw E.T. before you saw Super 8. At the ripe old age of 30s. So, Yeah, you know, it's a startlingly simple movie, which I guess, like, you know, I feel like I was doing, when I was thinking back on it, like watching this, like I thought I was doing like a Jaws thing where it's like, yeah, I remember the few key fundamental like themes or like iconic images from the movie, but I'm sure there's a lot more to it that I'm just like not remembering. But there's really not a ton. It's just that the mechanics are slow and drawn out and sort of just like, I mean, not in like an insufferable way, because they all like fit together appropriately. I think it's a very small, simple movie that doesn't have like a ton of stuff that occurs.
I get what you're saying about the pacing, in particular. One weird thing though is you get the setup, and then you have this really long part of getting everyone acquainted, which is kind of nice. It makes it feel a little more organic, but
you
then,
got the kids playing their they're playing a D&D or something there, and they were buying some pizza.
Yeah, and smoking. But you get the weird thing though of the third act feeling incredibly rushed, because then all of a sudden there are government men in spacesuits, and then E.T. dies but doesn't die, but he's back, but now we need
How cool was that thing where you got the them slowly walking in their suits up the street when their heads pop up over the hill, and then you got, you know, everybody's gonna have a militarized like 70 style RV, and then they got the rolling the little tube down the street. Like, that was a cool little, you know, sequence there.
Yeah, it is weird though when you think about like the fact that nobody's really talking to our characters during all of that cool visual setup. It's kind of funny, but I feel like the end of the movie is very rushed compared to the very leisurely pace of setting things up at the beginning.
It's also another Jaws too, where it's like, and then the shark blew up, roll credits, and then the spaceship took off and a tear rolls down his cheek, roll credits. It's like, oh. So there were probably some repercussions with all of those people with guns and stuff, but we don't need any of that, right?
I think you mean walkie-talkies.
No, did you watch the walkie-talkie version?
No, I and they have, I believe, reverted it or something. Yeah. I don't know.
There's a whole section here on the Wikipedia, the 20th anniversary version. They got some before and after images. I'm sure you were aware of this when it happened, right?
Yes, it was rather infamous when it occurred, because people thought it was absurd. Steven Spielberg, you know, apparently regretted having government agents point guns at kids, but at the same time, it just looks preposterous to have them raise walkie-talkies.
Did you ever see the South Park where they made fun of that?
No, I don't think I did.
They had a bunch of police guys running around, like literally pointing walkie-talkies at everyone for an entire episode. It was hilarious, but also literally the same thing.
Okay.
But intentionally. Anyway. Walkie-talkies are guns.
Also, I have another thing about this movie that I find off-putting, and it's a controversial statement, because I feel like there are a lot of people who really like the design of E.T. and feel like he's cute and, you know, he's a nice, good little alien guy. I don't love him. I've never really loved him, and maybe that is part of the reason why I kept this movie at super arm's length.
but he's got those big adorable eyes, and he purrs like a kitten. Well, they're shiny. And,
he looks like a leather handbag with another leather handbag on top with binocular eyes, and he pulses like
a mop handle with another leather bag on top of it.
Yeah, it's also the pulsing, which is supposed to make him look alive, but just makes him look like Videodrome or like you take your pick of David Cronenberg movies.
Sorry about the glowy chest.
No. Like his head has these lumps in it that will inflate with air bladders and stuff.
A little weird. Yeah.
Like he doesn't look alive, really. He looks really like a pile of silly putty.
That's probably one of the things that was, I don't want to say impressive. I want to say like fun in 82. It was probably, it's certainly more impressive then than it is now. But he, I mean, it's very much just like, oh, he's got a little, he's got a towel over his head so people don't see him. But really it's because it's not a particularly mobile puppet that they're moving around here.
Oh man, it was so obvious whenever you cut to the person who was small of stature inside of the suit with the helmet and arms sticking out.
Yeah, it was also pretty great. The first third of the movie where they have just the arms like peering in from doorways and stuff where they're incredibly articulated.
Except they're like slow motion and can't really pick up things because of the nature of the limitations of E.T. But that's I know a lot of people find it cute and charming and stuff, but I've never found it to be an appealing character. Just in terms of design, but
mm-hmm. I mean, he kind of just looks like a shaved raccoon or something.
Yeah, I mean, or like I don't know. A sex toy or something. Like he's so weirdly textured.
he's often shinier than you would expect him to be.
Oh, so shiny. It's so weird. And one of the weird things about this is the movie references Empire Strikes Back at several points, including Yoda directly.
Yeah, there's a lot of Star Trek talk in this movie. I don't know how he got away with that. This Steven Spielberg.
Yes. One only hopes that he knows the filmmaker. But they have a lot of that, including a lengthy product placement segment about toys. But the older brother even does his Yoda impersonation, Yoda impression for the kid. So that just reminds me of a more appealing alien puppet, where I think that the Yoda puppet in Empire Strikes Back is cute, and I find the E.T. puppet in E.T. creepy. So you like
little old green men, basically.
Yeah.
Versus whatever. I think.
Well, Frank Eyes could imbue that little, you know, latex puppet with some charisma and life. By virtue of the way he was able to puppet it. And it seems like the way that this puppet is designed for E.T., you can't really imbue it with much of anything. It just kind of does a bunch of finicky linear motions and air bladder inflations and things.
There's not a lot of... I mean, they did what they could with his head and face or whatever, but there's not a ton of nuance in his expressions.
No.
It's mostly done with audio, which I think they did a good job of sort of giving him emotion with sound.
I think that the sound design, the voice of E.T. in addition to all of the other audio aspects of him, I think all of that is good. I feel like that is what makes E.T. cute, more so than the visual appearance of E.T.
Mm-hmm.
If that makes sense.
You know, like that weird. I don't even know how to describe that sort of like the scared sound it makes.
Oh yeah, that's not cute. But I'm
like, it's like a cat put through a synthesizer or something.
So it's interesting. Also, just in terms of characters and stuff, I do like that our main character is Elliot, a middle child, who. Is able to relate to a younger child and pretend to be older than she is and more mature, and then also be less mature than an older brother who is trying to, you know, be the man of the house, so to speak, because his father has left with Sally. Was that what her name was?
Something
to go to,
like that.
To Mexico.
They're in Mexico. He hates Mexico.
Yeah. But
yeah, I think they do a good job of making the kids seem like kids that are potentially family members. I don't know. They seem like kids of the appropriate ages interacting with each other in the way kids do, but I don't know that they necessarily seem like the closest of families, but maybe that's kind of the point.
Yeah.
Everything's real loosey-goosey down there in Southern California.
Well, there are some times in this where I don't find how they interact to be believable. It just seems like they need to get certain things to happen in a certain order. Like at the very beginning of the movie, Elliot is... He seems unnatural trying to, in the way that he's trying to appeal to his older brother and friends to let him play. But then you have other scenes in here where he's very believable as the kid that he is, and his enthusiasm and excitement to explain how certain things to E.T. is interesting, and just as clumsy as it ought to be. In addition to his reaction to E.T. in peril, and also the pain that he needs to feel, which I feel like is vital for making this movie communicate the empathy that it needs.
Did you like the device whereby because they met first, they're sort of like emotionally pair bonded and they feel the same things as each other? Was that useful?
I thought it was useful, and I liked the slow build to it being revealed as a stronger bond. At first, you're not entirely sure with the reactions if it's 100% linked up, maybe.
Until he starts acting drunk and freeing frogs.
Yeah. But the... mechanically, I'm not sure exactly how the bonding works or what it really is supposed to signify in here, but this is the first time I'm seeing it, so I have not inspected it closely enough to perhaps know that. Because it doesn't seem to sustain E.T., and if anything, it seems to imperil Elliot, but it seems to be necessary in some ways for E.T. But then when he's feeling better later because his people are coming, then he doesn't need that bond. But I assume...
Right. Well, he's communicating in the other way, and he knows how, because he hasn't yet learned English from the Speak and Spell / daytime soap operas or mm-hmm. whatever the hell he was watching.
Yeah, and perhaps that... this empathy, this sharing of feelings that E.T. does with Elliot is how he would normally communicate with his own kind. Since they're leaning so heavily on the symbolism of the illuminated heart in his chest cavity, and mm-hmm. they all have the illuminated hearts, that seems to be... and the heart is typically associated with feelings.
The heart glows when the home is near and the family mm-hmm. and things and you know, love and stuff.
Home is where the heart glows.
Yeah, somebody write that down as a title. When you got love, your heart glows and then you cease to be dead.
I don't understand the mechanics of that necessarily. Supposedly he could feel the presence of his own people and that bond restored him,
but he was literally dead. He was literally turned to white, pale, sort of dried skin looking E.T. And then he was dead. He had no heartbeat.
His eyes had to be closed. He was inside of a cryogenic tube.
Mm-hmm.
But then
they were freezing him to take him away.
But then he's fine. He's right as rain.
Yeah, because the kid cries and says, "You can't be dead because the Oracle told me I would fall in love with the one," and then. Etc. So, you know,
I was gonna go with Sleeping Beauty, but sure.
No. It's Neo getting shot by Smith.
And then
Trinity loves ET, so ET can't be dead.
Mm-hmm. I And of course, when he comes back from the dead, he is standing around in a white robe with his glowing heart. So it's like, okay, calm down, Jesus E.T.
All of the military guys and the police guys turn to see E.T. standing there, and they all fire their six-shot revolver snub-nosed 38s at him, and he puts up a hand and stops all the bullets in midair, and then he flies through the air into the forest, and then his spaceship is there waiting for him.
But he does fly through the air.
I mean, I guess he does. I was going to say not of his own accord, but he does, kind of. He's in a bike.
Whose accord was it?
I don't know. You have a Civic, and I have a Mazda, so.
You used to have an accord. Well, yeah, what I mean is, obviously, I believe that he is the one who is controlling the flight.
So why didn't he put, like...
pedaling.
Why didn't he put a fist up in the air and go like Superman style and fly away with the white flowing robe behind him?
They were limited by the technology available to them. They didn't they couldn't do the cloth sim.
So they should have waited till 2007 when they had motion capture down, so they could have done this better.
Oh, well, no, then you have BFG.
Have you seen BFG?
No, I don't really want to, but
I love that book when I was a kid. I don't remember anything about it except, you know, he's big, but he's not big compared to his other friends who beat him up.
Curiously, though, the reason why it was on my mind is because Melissa Matheson, the writer of E.T., the extraterrestrial, was also the writer for the BFG movie.
Mm.
Mm-hmm. Based on Roald Dahl's book.
Mm-hmm. Didn't they also call that gun in Doom the BFG? Or was that Quake?
Quake.
I get the two mixed up. It's the same. One had more alien.
Wait,
type
no,
things
no.
Than
you
other.
You were right the first time. It was Dune.
It was Doom.
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 Doom. Mars
not
planet.
Not the one with the spice.
No. If you walk without rhythm, you won't attract government agents. Or Reese's Pieces.
Yeah. Did you like that? That's the thing that people have parodied and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
There was a request in the chat room that we discuss the Reese's Pieces. There was also a debate as to whether or not it was Skittles, Reese's Pieces, or M&M's.
What do you mean a debate?
I don't know. I guess they didn't watch the movie today.
It's 100% Reese's Pieces. This is a vision test? Someone gaslighting me?
Oh, now I'm being yelled at in all caps saying it wasn't a debate, it was a joke.
All right. Well, anyway, the Reese's Pieces. I love Reese's to pieces, but that was apparently there because they wanted to use M&Ms, but Hershey's turned them down. And so this kicked off the popularity of Reese's Pieces or whatever. Oh, I'm sorry. M&M is Mars and Reese's Pieces is Hershey. Is that right?
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah,
do you think after this movie came out and then Reese's Pieces were a big hit, that Steven Spielberg walked by the office window of the M&M's people and held up an E.T. VHS and said, like, how do you like them apples? And then, like, walked away all self-satisfactorily?
No, I don't know if he did that. But I would be curious to know. If like there's some longstanding grudge, like if his kids when they went trick or treating, if they received M&Ms like the little fun size pack, which had like five M&Ms in it, if he took those out of the kids' trick or treat bags and then threw them in the garbage afterwards.
Yeah, that'll show him.
Yeah, he won't allow that candy in his home.
Showed them because that's how that works. Because somebody definitely already bought them, but. You throw them away, then you win.
Yeah. It's the very definition of the E.T. cell phone.
Did you just say E.T. cell phone?
E.T. self own.
E.T. phone home.
Yes. E.T. self own. But
did you like the way he made his little phone with the stuff? Because he's smart?
Yeah, no. I mean, every Iliad knows how to use earth parts with their bare hands to make an interstellar communications device. One thing I do find interesting, though, is that he had to call them to come back and get him. They weren't like, oh, wait, we're missing a guy. Where's Melvin? Like, they didn't do a head count or anything.
Well, they knew he was missing because they were waiting in the doorway for him when the guys showed up, and they had to fly away, and they were sad.
Yeah, but then they're like, no, we're not just going to, you know, circle the block and then come back and get him. Like, they were just like, oh, no, he's dead to us now.
They should have just put on their cloaking device and just sort of, like, hovered, you know, 100 feet up in the air and waited for the guy with the jangly keys on his belt to go back to his truck.
Yeah, yeah. It's weird. Because when they get the message, they pop back on over and scoop him up. But that relied on a lot of things for him to do. Maybe it's like a rite of initiation thing on Earth, like, you know, in Predator.
What, he's got to go fight everybody on planet Earth before he's allowed back on the spaceship?
Yeah, just like that.
Maybe that's why they dropped him off in Southern California. They got to go kill Arnold Schwarzenegger before he can get back on the ship.
No, because that was not Southern California.
You're that's where Arnold Schwarzenegger lives, though. In 1982, I think.
Yes. Because of the events of the first film, they wanted to kill the actor, Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Well, this is the miscommunication with beaming popular art into space, is because E.T. and his crew on the ship, they saw this thing and they're like, wow, look at this super tough guy battling an alien down there on Earth. Like, this must be a documentary about Earth's finest warrior, so we better go down there and check this dude out. And they didn't realize that Predator was just, it was a movie, not real life. So they're like, I'm going to go find that guy and kill him to prove that I am the apex predator of the solar system. So they went to Southern California where they determined that Arnold Schwarzenegger lives.
But speaking of aliens, and various alien movies, I imagine in 1982 it must have been somewhat refreshing to have an alien show up and not be like, I'm going to lay eggs in your stomach or something.
Take me to your leader. I demand that you bow to me or something. I don't know.
Yeah, like they probably were like, yay. You know, it's a good alien person, because
they're collecting plants from around the universe or something is what it looks like, right?
Right, exactly.
Yeah, kind of in a Flight of the Navigator kind of way, because wasn't that ship collecting little dudes from all over the place?
Yeah, but that was a later film than this.
Oh, I don't remember what year things were. It had some shiny metal in it, so yeah, I guess that's later.
Yes, with computers. And I thought Paul Rubin's voice, maybe. But anyway.
No, I think you just did a Pee-wee impression.
Sure. So this must have been refreshing. You know, this is a pretty wholesome movie. It's got sad stuff in it, but nobody really dies. There's only, like,
it's PG. Who do you want to die in this movie? It's PG. It's for kids.
There are plenty of PG movies where parents die and stuff. In this, there's no permanent death.
Talking about like Bambi? That's animated. That's not real.
Yeah. Why are you picking fights with me? I don't know. What did I do?
Isn't this what we do on this show?
No. No, I'm agreeing with you, Dad. I'm agreeing with you. Like,
oh, yeah, sure.
Yeah, so I'm just saying it's a nice thing that this is a movie where nobody dies and it has a positive message about empathy and stuff and little kids, you know, sticking up for each other and family and stuff. And so
it's interesting,
good for
though,
them.
It's kind of about just like the basic innocence of a child who's not jaded and cynical, right? Because like the idea of just,
oh, I wouldn't
all
know.
Right, it's a lost alien. Let's help him. Is not probably the instinct of most adults, as noted by the fact that the mom immediately says, like, get away from it. It's like gross and sick and probably going to hurt you. But the kids are just like, hey, look, an alien. He can be our friend, because that's what kids do and stuff.
Yeah.
And, you know, love each other and help your friends and stuff. That's like the whole thing. It's not like anyone makes any particular, you know, turn or conscious decision to be like, no, we must help the alien. It is our duty to help the alien for reasons of some sort. He's just, you know, he's friends with the wrinkly alien guy, and he wants to help him out, even if it means letting him go.
Yeah. Which is something the other adults aren't really prepared for.
Yeah. Makes you wonder if Elliot was in Jaws, he probably would have just wanted to let the shark go.
I got a question for you. At the beginning of this mm-hmm. movie, with the government showing up to chase the spacecraft, do they just do that a lot? Or, like, why did they just have a force to go chase them?
My assumption was that somebody, some kooky person saw some lights in the sky or in the forest and said, like, hey, there's a thing. And somebody was monitoring the radio waves and said, send out the alien hunter guys.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I mean, they were there. They were running through the puddles in the mud.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, speaking of walking through things and trails, how much did you love the little ET foot stamps that were used to show that he had
weird
walked?
Little like fat bird feet or whatever they have.
Yeah, it's just so perfectly stamped down. But if you walk him, he just sort of has to do this waddle shuffle. Which
he doesn't have knees. He doesn't even really have ankles. He just kind of has like feet glued to the bottom of his trapezoidal torso.
Yeah, so you wouldn't get footprints. You would just get smeary dirt piles because he's just this is sort of like penguin waddle around.
If he tilts over far enough, he could get the foot off the ground,
I guess. But anyway, it's just a production design thing where I was just like, that's very perfectly defined.
Yeah, it's a very unusual footprint too.
Mm-hmm.
I feel as though if the large adult alien hunters were to have put their flashlights to the ground, because E.T. was very nearby, they could have seen his smeary dirt pile footprints and followed him pretty easily. Although his glowy heart and his yelling while he runs, which apparently is a requirement to make that weird synthesizer cat noise while he's running real fast, makes it pretty easy to find him.
Yeah.
They're not a particularly stealth alien race, are they?
No. Oh, well. Sometimes, like
when they're buried amongst stuffed animals.
Yes, and also the other time when the mom went in the closet to get the comforter that he had wrapped himself in, and so Elliot's freaking out, but E.T. had apparently already buried himself somewhere in there. Fine, and so he knew to hide himself then, but then doesn't know when to hide himself some other times. I don't know.
Well, he's smart-ish. He's just, he's an alien.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not questioning his intelligence. He could assemble an interstellar communicator. So...
From a speaking spell.
Yeah, he's just, you know, he just has book smarts, not closet street smarts, I guess.
There's a nice close-up image on Wikipedia of his communication device. It has a speak and spell. It has an umbrella lined with tinfoil, a coffee can, and some cables. And you've got a circular saw blade. And I don't know, something that kind of looks like a hacksaw.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And a record player, of course.
Elliot cut himself on that.
Yeah. Ouch.
That very famous scene with the glowing finger.
Yeah, probably didn't do anything for you because it's been parodied a lot. And there's not a whole lot to it.
Yeah, no, this is like Jaws, a movie where if you haven't seen it, you've seen it just by virtue of like pop culture and other people making things who reference this. So, yeah, you have absorbed the very complex and meaningful connection that can be established with the glowing finger.
Yeah. Did you notice any particular cameos of the young actors and actresses?
No, just Drew Barrymore. Who was I missing?
You got C. Thomas Howell, one of the bros on the bikes.
Who?
S.C. Thomas Howell. He's been a lot of things.
Okay.
Red Dawn. I mean, he's The Outsiders. He's most well known for Soul Man. Remember Soul Man, right?
No.
Soul Man is a very bad movie from 1986 where a white man can't get into college, so he dyes his skin dark brown so he can get a scholarship for African American people to get into college.
Really?
Yeah. It's not a movie that should be watched now, but it was a movie in 1986. Anyway, he falls in love with a girl and he has to do the right thing, etc., etc. But also, you had Erica Eleniak in there.
Who?
Erica Eleniak, girl who pops out of cake in Under Siege. The Steven Seagal movie.
I never saw it.
Tommy Lee Jones. Anyway,
I'm sorry I missed all these incredibly important people, Dan.
No, it's just them. Those are really the only ones.
Uh-huh.
Anyway. She was the girl that Elliot kissed in the classroom.
Mm-hmm. Good for him.
Mm-hmm. When he was drunk on Budweiser, I guess.
I wonder if you could make that scene today. It wasn't Budweiser, it was Coors.
Oh, was it Coors?
Yeah. Also, why?
Well, these days he would drink an IPA because it's Southern California.
Well, these days the family couldn't afford a house in Southern California.
That is very true.
Yeah, you see, this would be in the suburbs of Atlanta,
let alone one with a farm. Yeah, would you be able to find a suburb with a cornfield in the back? Or would you have to CG that in the backyard of Atlanta?
It would look as real as this does, if not realer.
You think they just got cornfields on like a flatbed truck that they could just drop down behind the place?
Well. Sure, but also I just mean like even if you were faking it, it would look better than this fake one here.
Mm.
Mm-hmm. You know, in movies, particularly 80s and earlier, where they were like, you know what, we can just put up a translate and some stuff so you don't see the horizon line, and we're done. And call it a day.
Oh yeah, you like the top of the mountain shot down at the city?
Yes, the one that feels like it's like 3 feet behind the actors.
I feel like I've seen the behind the scenes photo of what that city actually was. I'm sure Todd tweeted it or something. It's just it's like a piece of wood with some little glowy lines on it.
Yeah, it's so silly. I'm not a huge fan of that shot. There's an interesting dolly zoom shot that they do in the daytime. Looking down into the valley from presumably that same ridge vantage point is the impression we're supposed to get. But of course, that's reality and not a sad, dark set. But that's a difference. It's a minor difference.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Did you enjoy your viewing of E.T.?
Well, like I said at the beginning, I like this, and I can see why people like this, but I feel like I have aged out of the target demographic for this.
You think it would still work for a young child nowadays?
I believe so.
Hmm.
I'm not sure a young child would, it depends on how young, but I'm not sure a young child would necessarily really understand what a corded phone is, or...
Or like why these kids are walking around trick-or-treating without like parents every 3 feet so to monitor them.
Yeah,
or get kidnapped or something.
Or why there's cigarette smoke in a kitchen.
Yeah. I feel it's got a little bit of that Die Hard 2 thing with the smoking in the airport that you'll just never see again. It's very uncomfortable.
Yeah. Well, was it me or you could not really see the source of the cigarette smoke from the table, but it was like, who else is smoking a cigarette in this house? But then the mom comes in her weird bathrobe. It's like, I guess that could have been hers.
Yeah. Also, like, she gets annoyed that they, like, ordered a pizza. Like, she said, like, who gave you permission to order pizza? But, like, where was she? Or is it just that the pizza guy, like, he met the pizza guy down to the curb so they didn't have to ring the doorbell or something. They just snuck the pizza in the back door.
Well, that was their plan. Remember?
Because their plan was to sneak an entire pizza into the kitchen where the mother was there. And
well, she wasn't there at the time because she was, like, presumably taking a shower. Because when she comes home from work, she likes to take a shower, as established in a later scene.
Oh, was that in a later scene? I must have missed that.
Yeah, when she gets home, and it's when Drew Barrymore and the other kid, they're trying to, like, hide her in the closet, and this is after he's been pretending to be sick all day, so he's trying to distract his mother about his messy room, and she's like, I'm going to take a shower, you know, make sure you watch, you know, Gertie while I do that, and he's like, yeah, sure. So, yeah, I get the feeling she likes to take post-work showers, because otherwise it doesn't make a lot of sense why she's sauntering around her kitchen in the bathrobe in front of the other kids. But she's very concerned that there's doesn't appear to be a way you win the game, which is very funny, because lol. But yeah, she was weird. I don't really love her as a character. I appreciate that they're trying to show a single mother who's trying to raise her kids, but they didn't write her exceptionally well, and I don't believe the actress Dee Wallace apparently delivered a stellar performance in that particular role. She's done a lot of stuff.
Has she?
Yeah.
I did not recognize. Well, I mean, I don't know. I recognized her from this. Oh, Critters! My goodness.
Yeah. Halloween.
Howling.
The remake of Halloween in 2007.
I didn't see that one.
No,
also,
me neither.
I didn't see most of these other movies.
Yeah. She's in a lot of horror movies for some reason.
You got Peter Coyote. He's familiar.
Mm-hmm. Hansel and Gretel.
That wouldn't have been my go-to.
Yeah. So,
Gertie.
Anyway. Oh, she was
Gertie is an interesting name for Drew Barrymore.
Yeah, she was in Frighteners. Was she in Frighteners?
Who? Dee Wallace was in Frighteners?
Yeah.
Oh, she was probably one of the ghostly dead people or something.
Yeah. Well, she's not listed as one of the... Oh, wait. There she is. Oh,
she's also in Hansel and Gretel. Oh, no.
She was Patricia, the daughter in Frighteners. Remember the mentally unstable daughter who wanted to bring back Jake Busey?
Yeah.
That was Patricia.
She has had a lot of hairstyles over the years looking through her IMDb photos.
Yeah.
Oh, Cujo, my goodness. She's got a little bit of a Linda Hamilton thing going on in some of these early 80s looking things. With the hair.
Oh.
Anyway. E.T., I mean, people are going to be so mad at this episode.
Would they be more mad at this episode than the Jaws episode? Should we do a poll?
I don't know. There's some grumpy people in our chat room, but you can ignore them.
I currently am, except I have the chat window open. But I don't know. It's hard to explain, because if you grew up watching this movie and you have a fondness and nostalgia for it, you will feel very attached to this, and you will feel like we are attacking the thing that you love.
Also, I grew up watching this, and I had an attachment to it, and I feel like the best thing I can do to preserve that memory is to not watch this movie a couple more times.
Mm. I think you should watch it in excruciating detail and write down notes. Should do a story clock.
I don't.
It would just be like a bunch of empty marks for the first part, and then like a bunch of tiny little hash marks for the
You were doing that, you would be trying to watch the movie for an educational, intellectual purpose. But just trying to watch this movie and, like, you know, suspend your disbelief and fall into the feeling that the movie is trying to guide you down, I feel like that effort would not work well for me. as an old jaded man.
Yeah. Oh well. Maybe this Steven Spielberg guy will go on to do something.
Yeah, I'm sure he'll make some movies that we could enjoy.
He'll amble on to do 30s. Something else.
That's it's a Led Zeppelin song.
Mm. Is it?
And ramble on.
So it's not, is what you're saying.
It's all no.
Okay.
No.
Just checking.
Yeah.
Just checking.
He talks about Lord of the Rings in that song.
Oh. What a surprise for a Led Zeppelin song.
Yeah, I haven't seen those movies though.
Oh. I don't think Led Zeppelin was referencing the movies.
Oh no, yeah, but I'm not gonna read the books. Are you kidding me? it's not a book reading podcast. That's the other podcast.
Yeah, no.
I think there's a couple other podcasts that talk about reading books.
On the airplane, Jason was looking for something to watch, and he watched Blockers on the way over.
Did he watch it with the sound or with the sound off?
With the sound, and he laughed. And he thought it was very funny. And so I watched Blockers too, and I can confirm it was okay. Then
did you watch Game Night? Or yeah, it was Game Night. Is that what it's called? That was on the airplane when we were coming back from Italy a couple months ago.
No, I didn't see it. But but then on the flight back, Jason had already watched Blockers and wasn't sure what else to watch, so he watched Book Club, the movie with Candace Bergen and Mary Steenburgen and Jane Fonda and Diane Keaton.
I know I've seen the trailer for this, but I don't remember what it's about. Four lifelong friends have their lives forever changed after reading 50 Shades of Grey in their monthly book club.
Yes.
Why did he watch this?
Because I figured the target audience is probably him. He said it wasn't a very good movie, but
the target audience is Jason?
Well, I mean,
I think the target audience is people that look like Diane Keaton and Jane Fonda and Candace Bergen.
Yeah, I mean, so my aunt and Jason. It was not something I was going to watch, and so I haven't. But the verdict was it was not very good. But but yes, we can have a book club. Could read books.
I enjoy Candace Bergen and Jane Fonda to a certain extent. I don't enjoy Diane Keaton.
Well, I only like Diane Keaton in a couple of things, but it's weird because she's always Diane Keaton in everything. So
she's
it's
always,
not like
she's getting more and more Diane Keaton in things. She's getting very Diane Keaton.
If that were even possible, but like I like First Wives Club, and she's in it being very Diane Keaton. But I wouldn't necessarily. I don't like anything else that I can think of that she's been in recently.
What is that really terrible movie that Amanda made me watch?
Godfather 3.
Because I Said So, starring Mandy Moore. My God.
Ouch. So she's Mandy Moore's mother?
Yep.
Oh, good.
And she's trying to set her up with a husband.
Oh, dear. I didn't know. No, thank you. No, thank you.
Anyway, I'm very shocked that there was not another movie Jason could have watched other than the book club.
Well, he also watched an Italian movie called Throw Grandmother in the Freezer or something. I don't remember the title of it, but
Throw Mom from the Train?
No.
Eight Heads in a Duffel Bag?
No. But it was literally like, let's freeze grandma. The movie starts.
Grandma got run over by a reindeer.
No, you keep saying things that aren't it. But the movie's premise is that there's this stern grandmother figure who finally kicks the bucket, and then the granddaughters are going to collect her tax stuff or pension or whatever by pretending that she's still alive, so they freeze her.
Oh, good. Tax fraud or Social Security fraud. That's good.
Yeah, but it's an Italian movie, and then one of the daughters falls in love with a tax fraud investigator. Well, she falls in love with him, but doesn't know that he's a tax fraud investigator. And then that complicates matters, as you would expect, because he's also investigating the grandmother.
Story as old as time.
Yes. Happens so often.
They say there's really only two stories ever told. There's boy loves his alien, and there's girl falls in love with her tax fraud investigator.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, you about ready to phone home?
Yes. I'm past ready to phone home. I'm in the pasty, white, awful stage.
You're just laying on your bathroom floor, slowly dying.
I wish. The bathroom floor, at least, would be cool because it's tile.
Yeah. That does sound kind of appealing right now.
Guess who forgot to turn on his air conditioner before he got home?
Can't you make an IFTTT that, like, knows when you leave the office to do the thing?
Well,
geofence it?
I could geofence it, except it wouldn't turn on by the time I got home. Unless I set a broad enough geofence that it always turned on when I left my office. But if I did that, then most of the time it would be running for no reason.
So you would have to do like a combo. You'd have to do like a geofence, but like after 6 p.m. So your lunch doesn't screw it up.
But I'm usually going to Jason's.
Oh, see, fair point.
Yeah.
Well, you could have it reference, your first if statement would have to check your calendar to see if there's a defocused episode on your calendar.
So how many iPhones do I need to do this?
You only need one iPhone, but you need like several computers that are always on and connected to the internet running Keyboard Maestro.
Oh. Well, then I'll get right on that, by all means. But so let's phone home. Let's ouch our way out of here.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Mm-hmm.
E.T., the extraterrestrial.
Yes. Ouch, La Vista, Drew Baby Moore.